Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 372, side A, and it's January the 19th, 1979. I am frequently asked, why don't you sit down and write a book after doing 15 years' work of research, several book-length articles, actually, and just doing articles and mostly the radio tapes, or the home cassette tapes now. But the reason I don't want to isolate myself and spend 3 or 4 months in isolation is that the daily news is so important, and I really enjoy picking up what I call the missing pieces, and I want to talk today about some very important connecting links in the John Kennedy assassination. And I suppose that the book I write will be the tapes that you have that you can type up yourself and reread and maybe put those chapters together. I think the moving news each week and finding these little bits of pieces of the puzzles in the newspapers and magazines and books is much more exciting than burying myself and even condensing it to get it out in book form. So just type up your tapes and you've got a book. You don't have to tell me to write a book. It's funny when you listen to these things or reread this stuff after you've typed it up, it sometimes seems all new. It even seems new to me when I see some of the notes sometimes. I can't remember, did I say that? Because there's so much material coming out. But the pieces in the daily papers are fascinating. And also from the documents I'm getting from everybody from all over the country, fantastic articles. I can't thank you each time individually, but I thank you in a group and just keep sending it. Books, articles, anything you want. I am using all of it. Whether I talk about it specifically or not, you'll find it cropping up at the least expected place as it falls into a pattern. What I want to talk about now is an article in the New York Times, January the 7th, 1979, by Ted Zalk, called The Missing CIA Man. He's referring to John Paisley, a gentleman who worked for the CIA, who was found dead October the 1st. His body was decomposed, floating outside of Chesapeake Bay. He was 55 years old. The newspaper didn't report his death for a week. It was very low-keyed. They didn't fingerprint the body for 17 days. The CIA, the FBI had no fingerprints of him. The body was cremated. The hands were cut off. One hand was decomposed. The other was saved. The Maryland police called it a suicide. The CIA were the first to get to his boat to clear out the documents and get to his apartment and take out documents. The very first story was that he was an unimportant intelligence officer, an analyst who retired in 1974, just a senior analyst, nothing to do with clandestine operations. That is known as the cover-up. The real story of John Paisley is that he was deputy chief of CIA's Office of Strategic Research. He dealt with assessment of Soviet nuclear forces. He was a consultant to the CIA working on the most highly sensitive papers when he died. But he also comes out as being an agent who's worked with the CIA and James Angleton and the deep counterintelligence since 1948. He was privy to the most high secret intelligence in the United States. But even more than that, John Paisley and his wife, Marianne Paisley, and John Hart and Catherine Hart were two CIA couples, four CIA persons, highest up in the counterintelligence division of the Central Intelligence Agency, handling overseas counterintelligence money for agents. But Paisley not only worked with John Hart, and his wife worked with Catherine Hart, their superiors, I suppose John Paisley and Hart were equals in the game of intelligence. In fact, Paisley is probably over Hart from what I can read. But the point is that John Hart testified before the House Select Committee hearings September the 15th, 1978, on a Russian defector named Yuri Nosenko. And I knew at the time and did some radio shows on Nosenko that Nosenko had to be the man that made the connecting links of Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union as an agent of the CIA and Navy intelligence, and made the links of Lee and Marina Oswald to introduce them, to place Lee Harvey Oswald in the Minsk radio factory, had a role in downing the U-2 flight that Gary Powers wrote about in his book. And when Yuri Nosenko came to this country, he was debriefed by John Paisley. While Marianne Paisley worked for John Hart, and Yuri Nosenko was kept in isolation from April 1964 to 1968, and he was released. But up to his death, John Paisley was close to him. And I believed at the time that Nosenko was kept in isolation, not for all that heavy interrogation they talked about, but because he was brought over, he had to get out of the Soviet Union fast before they found out that he worked with Lee and Marina Oswald. They knew he worked with them as a KGB, but the Warren Commission was doing their work. By April, they had been arranging for his exit. Actually, I guess it takes months and meeting him and secret meetings to make sure he's a bona fide defector. But he arrived here in April, which means as soon as John Kennedy was killed, Yuri Nosenko, who worked himself up to probably the second highest in KGB counterintelligence, took a powder, came to the United States, and was kept from not only the Warren Commission, but the whole Lee and Marina story, kept isolated, and then later in 68, given a new identity. When he got out of his prison isolation, he was given over $500,000. He was paid for every day he stayed in that dark room with the bed bolted to the floor. But I realized that after John Hart testified, or at the time they were preparing the testimony of John Hart, they were severing Paisley's disappearance. There's a big question of whether or not that was John Paisley who actually died. And now it seems, from what I read in this article, that Paisley was substituted. He could be substituted. And another man drowned where the ship went down. And he could be taken to another place because then he could be away from the House Select Committee, from Noshenko, and from the whole Lee and Marina story and the Soviet counterintelligence network that we had set up by Reinhard Gehlen, that was chief of Hitler's intelligence, along with James Jesus Angleton. This is a can of worms with new names for you. I have a conflict. If I go too slow, I won't get the whole thing into one tape. If I go too fast, you won't get it. So I'll do the best I can, and we'll just take it from there. There were many deficiencies with the House Select Committee on Assassinations. I've accused them of covering at all levels. The most glaring area that they kept out, and the reason I never could be back at Washington to work with any investigators of any of these committees, is that not only have I said Lee Harvey Oswald never fired a weapon, but I believe I'm the only researcher who keeps hammering away continuously, at least since the 60s, 65, 66, 67, that Marina Oswald is an agent of the United States intelligence operations of Navy intelligence and CIA, and that she was very necessary in the role of the assassination to provide what would be a reasonable motive for making Lee Harvey Oswald the patsy for the killing of John Kennedy. John Hart was supposed to have retired from the CIA, and he came back to testify that Lee Harvey Oswald did not work for the KGB. That's why he was called before the House Select Committee. They wanted to rule out any conspiracies of the CIA or KGB or Fidel Castro or organized crime. So the area that they used to show that Lee Harvey Oswald did not work for the KGB was to bring in the Yuri Nosenko story. And 1 week after John Hart testified that Yuri Nosenko had been brought to this country and heavily interrogated, 1 week after that, John Arthur Paisley, his close friend, was either dead or faked murder with the help of the CIA and the FBI. The links of John Paisley and John Hart go back to James Angleton. He calls himself James Jesus Angleton, into the Russian department, the CIA counterintelligence, and their activity, their black activity of murders and conspiracies dating back as early as 1948, as soon as the Central Intelligence Agency was formed. Paisley's widow, Marianne, is also a CIA agent. She has hired Bernard Fensterwald from the Committee to Investigate Assassinations, who was James McCord's attorney, to represent her. Whether she ordered the body cremated, and she knew it hadn't been fingerprinted, and she didn't want to see it. And she went to his apartment and took from the apartment and the office and the boat important CIA documents. And Mrs. Paisley is working with Bernard Fensterwald at this time to represent her interests. Now, Lee and Marina Oswald had contact with at least 40 known agents in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, approximately 20 in Mexico, another 20 in New Orleans, and goodness knows who in the safe houses in Brussels or on the boat coming home from the Soviet Union. They were met by the CIA at the harbor, the International Rescue Committee, a CIA organization. When John Hart was on the stand before the House Select Committee testifying, he, of course, didn't mention John Paisley or his connections to Yuri Nisenko at all. That was passed over. And I might remind you that the death of John Paisley, or the disappearance, 1 week after John Hart testified, is similar to the deaths that took place at the time of Senator Church's committee, Sheffield Edwards, who was recruited by the CIA, and Robert Mayhew, testified before Senator Church. He was dead a month later in 1975. William Harvey, who headed 400-member assassination teams with headquarters home in Indianapolis, he testified before the Church Committee and died June 17, 1976. John Roselli talked about the links of organized crime to Robert Mayhew, the Defense Department, the CIA, the FBI. He testified and died August 5, 1976. Sam Giancana was being guarded around the clock. He was about to testify, and he was shot gangland style before he ever testified. So witnesses missing in 1976 were quite frequent before the Church Committee, and then when the House Select Committee started, they really got into the heavies, the very heavies. Paul Rygotorodsky, the head of the Galen Czarist Nazi CIA links in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that made possible the Greek Orthodox Church conduit in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in Houston. Gary Powers, with his knowledge and expertise of the U-2, which is important considering Paisley's work in the Soviet Union and with electronics and radar. He has a parallel of experience similar to Lee Harvey Oswald's, working with air flights and the U-2 and speaking the Russian language and so forth. George DeMornchild died April 77. William Sullivan of the FBI that set up the assassination teams died November 9, 1977. And Carlos Prio Siqueiros, who worked with this team May 5, 1977, and Donald Donaldson died December 77. So there was a rash of deaths at the time of the Church Committee of major witnesses. And then when the House Select Committee on Assassinations got going, they had their full share of deaths this whole time. But it was just at the conclusion of their hearings, and 1 week after John Hart testified, that John Paisley was, I guess, gone for all practical purposes. Now, the Nosenko story is important because John Paisley links to Yuri Nosenko. As soon as Nosenko sets his foot in the United States, John Paisley was with him. And therefore, and considering how high up he is in intelligence, it's important to know about the background of Yuri Nosenko and what he could have been doing in the Soviet Union. Someone high up in the KGB, and he was the second highest in KGB counterintelligence, had to allow Alexander Zeiger, he's a man from Argentine, from Poland to Argentine, up to the Minsk radio factory. Someone in the KGB provided his placement in that Minsk radio factory for spying and espionage work linked to the Central Intelligence Agency. Someone had to do that in the KGB. Somebody had to arrange for Marina Oswald to meet Alexander Zeiger's daughters, because there are documents that exist proving Zeiger worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. There are other documents to prove that Lee Harvey Oswald was to bring a Russian wife back, and he was introduced to her in that CIA-run office in Russia by Alexander Zeiger. Marina was a friend of his two daughters. And I believed all along when I heard the Yuri Nosenko story and how he was brought to the United States, interrogated, that he handled Lee Harvey Oswald's KGB papers. You see, Lee Harvey Oswald was trained with Russian in the Marines. He went to New Orleans and picked up enough money for a trip to Europe. He was secretly flown into Moscow, where he made contact with his CIA agent, and I'll give you the name of their agents, in the Moscow area. And then he was sent to Minsk. Now, someone in the KGB had to do the placing. You can't train a man Russian language, radar, electronics, U-2 expertise, send him to Moscow, and count on just some Russian could have him picking up elephant manure at the Russian circus. once he got there. He has to know that he will be received by a Central Intelligence Agency man disguised as KGB. Reinhard Gehlen, chief of Hitler's intelligence, was setting up a network in Eastern Europe from the time of the revolution, and by 1922-23, a network of czarists disguised as KGB were working themselves up to the highest echelon. And I believe that this is what Yuri Nosenko was doing. And this is why he's a millionaire today, living comfortably in the East, on the East Coast. I believe that Nosenko brought Zeiger from Argentine. I think he was important in placing Lee Harvey Oswald from the embassy in Moscow to the radio factory in Minsk. I think he could have been in contact with Priscilla Johnson and various CIA agents in the embassy and placed Lee Harvey Oswald exactly where they wanted him to be placed. I think Yuri Nosenko was that man. And John Arthur Paisley, who died in September 78, worked since 1948 with James Jesus Angleton of counterintelligence. And as I say, he worked with John Lyman Hart, who testified a week before his death. And I think all of these people were important in the assassination cover-up of John Kennedy and also in breaking d'entente for Khrushchev and Eisenhower at the time they downed that U-2 flight. Lee Harvey Oswald was capable in the Marines. He worked in the radar and radio section. He was stationed at U-2 bases in Japan and the Philippines. He was taught Russian language in the service. He had top secret security clearances. He was sent to the Soviet Union, to Moscow and Minsk. He was watching vapor trails of high-flying planes. He was watching troops and troop movements in the mud. He came home to a secretary and began dictating his notes that he had brought home. And at the end of the assignment, he brings home this Russian woman, Marina, who became very, very useful. He met her once at a meeting. He met her a second week at a meeting. And the third week, he proposed. Marina was a pharmacist. I don't know whether Lee Harvey Oswald was drugged or not, but he had already written, "Send me my papers, I'm coming home." Before he proposed to this woman, he knew he was coming home. They were married weeks later, and Marina Oswald was able to leave without any question about this defector and his Russian wife coming to the United States. The CIA and the FBI, our immigration, welcomed her with open arms and received them at the port, financed their trip, and even gave him another passport in June of 63. There had to be someone high up in the KGB and in the CIA, and I think at this end, as I say, John Paisley looks like he's the man who held the key to Lee Harvey Oswald, Marina Oswald, and Yuri Nosenko. While Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union in 1960, Robert Mayhew of the CIA and FBI was hiring his assassination teams. He had a team, he had William Harvey working for him, who had been in the FBI for 20 years and the CIA 22 years. Harvey worked 1940 to 47 in the FBI, that was 7 years rather, and the CIA from 47 to 69, that's 22 years. And he had a team of 400 intelligence agents set up for political assassinations of heads of state. And William Harvey, who was killed after he testified at the Church Committee, was setting up his teams along with Sheffield Edwards and the Central Intelligence Agency. And they also had on their side Earl Warren, who had always worked with Murray Chotiner, the same man who had selected Richard Nixon. In the event of political assassinations, all bases were covered long before the guns went off, and they're still covered today. And that's why we can't get these things exposed at the highest level. We can only learn them down at this level where we can talk about them. William Harvey died in Indianapolis, the home state of Jim Jones and Emily and William Harris and Tom Charles Houston and Agnew's foundation there. And I have to reevaluate William Harvey and the Indianapolis connections because he was the man that was getting the assassination team set up with the Central Intelligence Agency in 1960 and with the FBI also. When William Harvey died in June of 1976, the Washington Post had a wonderful two-page article. I'll give you that date if you want to look it up. It's called "The CIA's Loaded Gun, The Life and Hard Times of America's James Bond, William King Harvey." And the article says, "When they buried Bill Harvey last June, One of the most controversial clandestine operators in the CIA died of a heart attack at age 60. It was the end of an era. Harvey held the answer to whether President Kennedy ordered Castro's death. And that's the Washington Post article by David Martin. They don't have the honesty to say that William Harvey held the answer whether the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI ordered John Kennedy's death. And that's why William Harvey had to be killed. He was age 60, and John Paisley was age 55. They also mentioned that Harvey was sent to Rome as a CIA station chief, which I think is interesting, considering the assassination links of coming through Rome that are getting pretty tight, and we can go into that later. I don't want to digress too far off. He was the head of Task Force W, 400 men who were assigned political assassinations for heads of state. So this is a man, William Harvey, who worked with James Jesus Angleton and Richard Helms and Alan Dulles and John Hart and John Paisley. And also, they were being bumped off no matter how high up they were. Sullivan and now Paisley gone, and Harvey's gone. And we have Richard Helms and James Angleton still alive, and I wonder how long they'll live, or I know they'll never talk, but I just wonder how long they'll live. Now, why all this fuss about Marina Oswald? Why would a man high up in Navy intelligence, Army intelligence in the United States be anxious to bring a Russian woman back to the United States? And why would a CIA man who worked for Reinhard Gehlen or disguised as a KGB person want to worry about Marina Oswald? She was a very, very important woman because without Marina, there'd be no way to put the assassination blame on any patsy, specifically Lee Harvey Oswald, because there was no physical evidence to link him to the murder of John Kennedy. That's why Marina was the first witness selected by the Warren Commission, where you usually would begin with a gun to prove that he killed the president or shot this gun. You have a gun with no fingerprints on it and nobody putting him in the place where the shots were to have come from and no way to prove that he ordered the gun, and he says he didn't have it. You see these planted pictures of him that really do not prove that he held the gun, with his wife saying she took two pictures. Nobody asked her who developed them, who printed them. You took two pictures in your entire life. Wouldn't you take them of your darling little baby, your daughter? You've got family in Russia, aunts and uncles and cousins. The only two pictures you ever wanted to take in your whole life were of Lee with a gun. But that's a different story. She was very useful because, A, she provided the motive for the assassination, his personality, which was then orchestrated by other agents from the Gehlen operation. She planted the evidence. That was the second point. She could say, oh, I looked under the blanket and there was a gun there, but it's empty. She made up stories about physical evidence or stories about Lee wanting to shoot Richard Nixon, which can't possibly be proven, or that he shot at General Walker, which could be disproven. Lee and Marina were a great team. She provided all the stories that would make Lee Harvey Oswald guilty without anybody cross-examining what she's saying or even the evidence. I also believe that when that assassination team was set up in 1960, it was done because Joe Kennedy's son wanted to run for president, and they didn't want Joe Kennedy's sons as presidents of the United States. And Nixon was a selected man. They invested a lot of time and money in him, and he's a perfect selection, as you see. He just keeps bouncing back. He's just marvelous. He never did anything wrong, and he's a perfect guy to put into office, and if they catch him with a little crime, he destroys the tapes, the whole reels, or pieces of the tapes, and he can lie constantly and never be held for it. And then he can appoint another criminal to take his place who assures him for all time he can't go to prison for any crimes, because both of them would sync with that Warren Commission report. So I think Nixon as a selected agent was marvelous. Now, Marina worked with a group of people. She was met in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and met Max Clark and Gally Clark and George Bowie, Lydia Dimitri, George and Jean de Morenchel, Declan and Kathy Ford, Alex Gibson. Alex Taylor is her married name, daughter of George de Morenchel, Everett Glover, Dorothy Gravitas, Peter Gregory, Charles Gregory, Elena and John Hall, Charles Harris, Mrs. Harris, Alex Kleiner, Mr. Kristinik, Ilya Mamatov, Anna and Teo Miller, Michael and Ruth Payne, Paul Ray Godorodsky, Ray, Frank Ray, Valentina Ray, Tom Ray, and Natalie Ray, two different couples, and Gary Taylor, that's the husband of Alex. Her first, it's a woman, but she goes by the name Alex Taylor, DeMarinshield's daughter, and Igor Voshinin and Mrs. Voshinin. Those were just a few of the intelligence agents of the CIA working with Marina to provide the cover-up for the assassination. Marina was very useful, and the assassination team was set up in 1960. And I want to get that very clear, and William Harvey, Sheffield Edwards, and the assassination teams, the funding, and while they were doing their work in the United States, setting up these teams, they were working on Lee and Marina, who would be arriving in 1962 from the Soviet Union. So the Soviet connection is very important. Marina Oswald, CIA agent in the Soviet Union that arranged all of her papers to come over here, was John McVicker, and I've given you the information on John McVicker. Lee Harvey Oswald arrived at the Soviet Union, the U.S. agent, U.S. embassy at the in the Soviet Union, and he was met by Richard Snyder. I'm sure he was told to come in on a Saturday when nobody would be there, and the only two men in the office then were John McVicker and Richard Snyder, and McVicker would take care of all of Marina, the contacts of Marina, but again, they needed a KGB man inside the Soviet Union to make these arrangements and move him from Moscow, where he met McVicker and Snyder, to get him on down to Minsk. So Oswald had his agent was Richard Snyder, and Marina's agent was John McVicker. Marina also had Jack Crichton, that was her interpreter, John Crichton, rather, after the assassination. He came in after John Kennedy was killed, and they took her the Inn of Six Flags and kept her there a few days, and then with Secret Service agents. And the first man with her to translate and take care of her was John Crichton, an oil man from the Central Intelligence Agency. I think I'm more conscious of Poland now with the Polish Pope and his background for the chemical factory. We still have to do some more tapes on that for IG Farben and Auschwitz. I think the fact that Alexander Zeiger came from Poland and then went to Argentina and then to the Minsk radio factory and made that great connection of Marina and Lee, and then they both come to the United States, and when the President of the United States is killed, Marina is used to cover the entire crime. We have to go back to the city and the area and did a little more work on where Alexander Zeiger came from. I'll have to do that before he headed the Minsk radio factory in the Soviet Union. He was from Argentina to Minsk, and I think a lot more has to be done on Alexander Zeiger's routes through that notorious Poland that was just blanketed with concentration camps. There not only was Auschwitz and Lubin, but there was Dachau and Buchenwald and Ravensbrück and Bergen-Belsen, and I have a list of about 18 or 20. The most notorious was Auschwitz, but Poland was filled with concentration camps and deportation camps, and Zeiger went from Poland down to Argentina and then back to Minsk. Of course, I mentioned last week Dr. Rudolf Winokur of the CIA, who was the historian in the War Department of the Pentagon who sent the men to write the Warren Report. I've given you the data on Mr. Winokur because I forgot to do that or didn't have space last week. And while we're on that, I'm giving you the work on Bill Moyers, because as soon as John Kennedy was killed, Bill Moyers was with Lyndon Johnson. He became the press secretary for Lyndon Johnson and gave out all the news on the assassinations and the Warren Report. Bill Moyers was from the CIA, so that they had all bases covered, the historian for the Warren Report. They had Lee Harvey Oswald with his agents in the Soviet Union arriving and meeting agents in the United States. But the important part, the connecting links, I want to get to now are the fascinating links of John Paisley and his background with Yuri Noshenko. I think this is the thing that really excites me, is seeing the relationship of the counterintelligence fitting together. And unfortunately, we have to learn about these things after somebody dies. The Washington Post and the New York Times give the best obituaries. When somebody dies, you get all the connecting pieces, and while they're alive, they don't tell you anything. But as soon as they're dead, you have to wait till they die, like the Washington Post, to get the real, true story, two full pages on who William Harvey is. When he was alive, we didn't even know about him except his little testimony before these half-assed committees. But once they die, you get some wonderful stories about the route they've taken, and that's where the missing pieces fit in. Yuri Nosenko came to our attention, as I say, September 15th, 1978. Mr. Hart, John Hart, got up and said they handled him wrong, that they gave him 4 years of intense interrogation, and that he, in fact, was not an agent any longer of the KGB, and that he was right in saying that Lee Harvey Oswald did not work for the KGB. He defected. Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union from 1959 till 62 when he came home, and Nosenko defected just a few months later, officially from April 1964. His defection was finalized, actually, but I'm sure it was arranged immediately after the killing of John Kennedy that he was ready to run to the United States, and it must take at least those 3 or 4 months before he came to the United States. And then in 1968, the United States decided that he was, in quotes, a legitimate defector. They gave him over $500,000. He's on a salary now of thousands of dollars a month. I forget how high it is. And John Lyman Hart testified that this was 8 days before Paisley died, that Mr. Nosenko had been given a new identity, and that right now he was having trouble with his memory, that he just had a poor memory. Now, we could go into mind control and erasing memories, or what they did to him in that little vault, but we'll turn the other side over now and go into John Paisley, agent of the CIA.